Machineries in Fire, A Series of Fix, by A Box the Color of Heartache, narrated by Rhea314. 1. Variations. 3 up and 5 over, Faliol, Lin Shu instructed. The boy obligingly moved the game piece to the designated position, leaving sticky finger marks on the board. Lin Shu would sigh if he had lungs to sigh with, a drawback of being a revenant if ever there was one. Wipe your hands, please. On a napkin. Faliol halted in the action of ruining yet another shirt, glared at the approximate space where Lin Shu's portal would be, and scrubbed at his hands with a napkin. Lin Shen floated past the game board on his way between instruments, glancing over the formations. He flicked one of Lin Shu's stones off the board and replaced it with his own. The stone skittered across the floor, chased by a long-suffering servitor. All of Lin Shen's servitors were bird forms, except the handful he maintained for heavier work. "Thank you," he said to the bird form as it returned the stone to the table, poking its approximation of a head affectionately. "Stop letting me win," he said to Lin Shu. "It's more entertaining than beating you," replied Lin Shu. "I actually have to think this way. Your game skills are mediocre for a Nerai." "Your fixation on games is absurd in a Lioge," Lin Shen quipped back. "This is diagnostic as much as it's entertainment, Lin Shu. If you throw every game, you're going to throw my readings." "If I weren't throwing every game, you wouldn't have time to take readings," muttered Lin Shu. This was not entirely true. Playing against Lin Shen was sometimes a challenge, if only because the man had an infuriating habit of casually exploiting loopholes in the mathematics of the games, a very un-Nerai-like trait. Lin Shen did not dignify the comment with a response. He seated himself cross-legged beside a maintenance panel and began to manually calibrate a fiddly assortment of blinking dials. The bird form servitor watched from a respectful but interested distance. Whatever else Lin Shen was, he was chillingly competent. Most technicians relied on their servitors for fine-tuning like this. He only asked for their assistance when human fingers would not be precise or steady enough. Longya Outpost orbited a picturesque little moon at the ass end of nowhere in the Jianghu March. It wasn't complete exile, but it was close. Lin Shu often wondered what a Nerai had to do to be banished rather than exterminated. Lin Shen's brand of individualistic mathematic artistry was as good as a target on his back. Someone, somewhere, must be holding him in reserve for something. The view out of the windows might be breathtaking, but the relative position of the outpost to civilized space could make a lesser man weep. Nerai Lin Shen thrived. He reigned over a contingent of strangely devoted technicians and servitors. Despite the isolation, the man was uncomfortably well-informed about the happenings outside his march. Their fathers had been friends. Because of this paternal attachment, Lin Shen had rescued Lin Shu from the racked remains of his pulverized army in the wake of the Lioge catastrophe. Plum Ridge Fortress was a radioactive hellhole of overlapping, lingering exotic effects at the time of Lin Shu's extraction. Lin Shu did not ask Lin Shen how he managed to get in and get both of them out, and he did not want to know. Even as a disembodied sentience, the thought of his Kel, his fiery feathers troop, going up in flames the way all good Kel secretly yearned to die, blindsided him with agonized grief. They might have been suicide hawks, but they were under his command. Lin Shu lost his body, but his soldiers lost their lives. "Marshal, snap out of it! You're fucking up the last 6 hours of my work!" Lin Shen's voice finally reached Lin Shu. "Please stop screaming. You've frightened Faliol." Thelio was hunkered under the game table, rocking back and forth with his hands over his ears. Four bird forms and a delta form servitor huddled around him, their mechanical whirring pitched to comfort. The patterned blink of lights, a soothing flow of pale pinks and soft greens. The stone-fetching bird form chirred and beeped gently, wrapped in Thelio's arms like a security toy. Lin Chen could have muted Lin Shu, might have shunted him back into the nerve-scraping absence of the cradle. Instead, Lin Chen chose to shout down a ghost rather than exercise direct control. The Nirai folded his sleeves so his hands were clearly in view and walked to Thelio's hiding place. He knelt and offered a hand. Thelio, he's back. You haven't done anything wrong. I'm sorry, Thelio. Lin Shu managed. It's all right, Fledge. Without a body, he could not reassure the boy with Kel body language, but faction jargon helped. Years of service with the Kel seemed worth the horrors of war to know how to talk to this child. I'm not displeased with you. I haven't left you to serve alone. Servitors moved out of the way to allow Thelio to emerge from under the table. His commanding officer's reassurances blotted out the recent distress. The noise was gone. He was not a Kel alone, floundering like a featherless chick, panicked by the collapse of his link to the only nearby superior officer. Thelio clung to Lin Chen. Lin Chen awkwardly smoothed the child's hair. He knew he was a stand-in for the actual person Thelio wanted, and a poor substitute at that, but he tried nonetheless. The sooner Lin Shu's clone was ready, the better. Fledge, thank you for being my hands today. Lin Shu addressed the boy steadily. Thelio disentangled himself from Lin Chen and stood to attention, eyes fixed on Lin Shu's portal. He still wouldn't talk. Almost 8 months without a word, though Lin Chen said the silence was self-imposed. Lin Shu was sure that if he ordered the boy to speak, Thelio would speak, but nothing in the universe would make him give that command. I have matters to discuss with Nirai Lin Chen. You are dismissed for recreation for the remainder of the cycle. I expect your prompt return to duty at the morning chimes. Thelio performed a heartbreakingly perfect salute. Dismissed, Fledge. The boy scampered out of the room, the Delta Form servitor coasting anxiously in his wake. Revenant and Nirai watched him go, one with eyes, the other doing his best not to think about how vision worked for an untethered consciousness. Well, said Lin Chen, loading the single syllable with more latent meaning than Lin Shu thought was entirely fair. Lin Chen nibbled a hangnail and then began to search for his stylus. It was stuck in his hair, but Lin Shu didn't deign to help. I was thinking, said Lin Chen, lifting a stack of hopelessly old-fashioned drafting papers in a fruitless hunt for the stylus. A first, said Lin Shu. Lin Chen flicked his gaze to the portal with a sour, flat stare. Low-hanging fruit. Lin Shu wished he had shoulders to shrug, but Lin Chen seemed to read the gesture anyway. He responded with a rude one of his own. As I was saying, said Lin Chen, before you started howling and rolling back 6 hours of tuning, I wanted to suggest that you pick a signifier for stabilization effects. I have a signifier, said Lin Shu, realizing as he said it what a stupid thing it was to mention. You had a signifier. You're a revenant. You don't sleep, and Rahal can't scry you. Anyway, walking around with a mirror web starward reaching is suicidal at best and grossly egotistical at worst. Lin Chen scratched his head, discovering the stylus with a ha of delight. Linshu mulled this over. I can choose anything. Will the stabilizing effect vary depending on my choice? Linshun shrugged. Who the fuck knows? His gaze unfocused slightly. Kujin knows, he grumbled to himself, so quiet that Linshu almost missed it. He'd mentioned the name in passing a few times. Whoever Kujin was, Linshun regarded him with a mixture of violent dislike and starstruck admiration. It was unsettling. I've never done this before, but I could do the equations in my sleep. How reassuring. Linshu felt like a traitor, giving up his mirror web. But Linshun was right. He would be purged the instant he made himself known. He was an illegal intelligence and a doctrinal fugitive. But yes, I can give you anything you like, though I suggest you assume a faction you can live with without having any telling Liozh-esque moral conniptions. We can pick at the nuances of the form until it's right. Linshu was quiet. Linshun let him think in peace, fussing with filters and the grid readouts. Linshun, what's your signifier? Linshu asked aloud, surprising himself. It wasn't taboo to ask, but it was personal, outside of an intimate or professional relationship which hinged on compatibility. Then Arai replied absently, without looking around. Lloyd moth eyes in fractals. In Narai speak, it means I'm distractible and a pain in the ass for group research. Something about the word eyes caught Linshu's attention. If he had eyes of his own, he would narrow them. And what's your variant? Linshun turned around in his chair to face Linshu's portal, smiling like a fox. Oh, fuck you! Linshu wanted hands so he could throw them in the air in exasperation. A variant signifier was rare enough. A variant outside one's dominant faction was absurd. No wonder Linshun was kept in exile rather than eliminated. Please, no need to be jealous, said Linshun loftily. As if you weren't guessing from the outset. I could give you a variant yourself, you know. They're handy. I'm sure they are. Linshu growled. You might as well tell me, since you're so smug about it. There's no sport in that, chided Linshun. And it will give you something to think about when you're bored. Here, bored was code for trying not to go mad in the cradle when isolation was necessary for progress. Linshu conceded the point. Whatever. What do you think of Knife Rose Frostbitten? Asked Linshu. Anden. Not my first guess for your preferences, but I can see the appeal. Frostbitten might be a little on the nose, though, don't you think? What are you going to do? Start calling yourself Mei Changsu? Miffed silence from the portal. Linshun sunk his head in his hands. Oh, for the love of fox and hound! 2. Moth and Web. Isolation pushes even the strongest to the brink. Mei Changsu's voice circles the vase of flowers, around and around. Linshun finds it difficult to turn his back on the vase, even though he knows, with absolute certainty, that Changsu is no threat to him as a ghost. The Shuos in him wants more eyes on Changsu. You said you propagate them yourself? Changsu asks. His voice has not strayed more than a half meter from the chrysanthemums in the past hour. Linshun's shoulder blades prickle. I do, he answers. The flowers are spectacular. Yellow melts into green so pale it all but vanishes against a white background. Sunset reds nest between saffron oranges and purples from the edge of blue to the cusp of red. Lin Chen brought them as a present for Mei Changsu, whose voice scrapes raw when he talks about colors. Grid-projected flowers are colorful, but Lin Chen firmly believes only a real flower knows color best. Perhaps they are too much for someone fresh from 3 weeks shut into the black cradle. Lin Xu's self-control flutters loose at the edges like a flag too long in high winds, successfully and safely modifying Mei Changsu's new signifiers will take longer than Lin Chen expected, because he has to account for their combined effect on Lin Xu's core ethics. He and Lin Xu agree to protect those ethics at all costs, even if it makes Mei Changsu's overall presentation more unstable. The interactions of the three signifiers together is making for an alarming tendency towards self-loathing, which, mixed with Lin Xu's recent latent traumas, promises disaster. They're supposed to be talking about alternatives, but Mei Changsu can't make himself leave the flowers. What do they smell like? The readouts under Lin Chen's fingers display the coefficients of Lin Xu's soul, if there is such a thing. Lin Chen winces away from the heartbreaking spike in equations of longing when Changsu speaks, guiltily grateful that the revenant's attention is fixed elsewhere. Even a dead Liuzhi can still spin a web. The Liuzhi mirror web represented interconnection and meditative self-reflection. Lin Chen takes a self-deprecating moment to reflect that he, a Narai with a Shuos variant, should have known better than to invite a web into his home and expect not to be caught up. Wishful thinking suggests Kujin drew the same conclusion and decided to rid the universe of spiders spinning webs of inconvenient conscience across space like cheese wire strung up for unwary psychopaths. Moth meet web. Perhaps he did not care to be sliced to the quick by a sense he deliberately cut out of himself. In reality, the hanging curtains of the Liuzhi influence likely offended his sense of mathematical aesthetics, so he dusted them out of the rafters with a railgun. Lin Chen. Mei Changsu's voice, halfway between Lin Chen and the flowers. He is shredding himself between his starving need for human interaction after the isolation and sensory stimulation after complete deprivation. Lin Chen stands and sets down his grid tablet. In return for complete trust, the bare minimum he can give Mei Changsu, in return, is his complete and undivided attention. Changsu is a disembodied presence, but he is still a person, more than the numbers on the screen, however entrancing they might be. Thinking of people as numbers to manipulate in one's favor is the knife edge of a precipice. Mei Changsu is not the only one with a core of ethics to protect. The Narai boosts himself up to sit next to the vase on the table and touches the flowers. They smell like pollen and spice and earth and rot, says Lin Chen. The red ones are a sweeter spice. For some reason, the yellows always end up smelling like surgical soap, no matter what I do to breed it out of them. Surgical soap. The purples are modified from a perfume variety I caged off an Andan who owed me a favor. It took 15 generations to make them smell like chrysanthemums again and not vanilla. 3. Flock. Where did he come from, anyway? Asks Mei Changsu. From the sound of it, he could be standing at the far end of Lin Chen's desk, watching Fei Liu play a leaping game with a trio of servitors. Both men, tangible and intangible, note the servitor's uncanny devotion to the boy. The bird forms understand Felio's kellness and his childishness. The game is based on deliberately and humorously modified kell formations. They tease him by hovering out of reach or stabilize themselves so he can launch himself from their backs. Lin Chen suspects Felio communicates better in machine universal than in high language. He still won't speak. Lin Chen's fingertip halts just above a command key. Though it does no good, he slides his gaze in the direction of Mei Changsu's disembodied voice. He gives the empty air a quizzical look, verging on searing. Are you asking me for confidential information about a patient? A patient who has not yet reached his majority? The numbers on the display rearrange themselves, chastened but frustrated. I suppose I am, yes. Ninchen, you know he won't stay with you when I go. Formation Instinct has a fist around his throat. He's imprinted on me as his commanding officer, and he can't even see me. If I don't know where he came from, I could inadvertently trigger an episode or impede his recovery. I would ask how long you've been planning that argument, but it's all in the data feeds. Ninchen mutters bitterly. I knew the graphs looked scheming lately. Don't be so self-congratulatory. I'm always scheming, scoffs Lin Shu. This is progress from past adamant denial of his nasty, devious streak. Lin Chen tallies it as a victory on his mental scoreboard of subtle successes. You realize you could solve the problem by ordering him to stay with me. He would be safe here at Longya. Lin Chen says it, even though he knows it isn't an option. Fei Liu will follow Lin Shu, come hell or high treason. He'll crack Lin Chen. It would be crueler to leave him behind than take him along. And he's Kel. He's meant for battle. Mei Changsu knows as well as Lin Chen that Fei Liu turns into a panicky wreck when Lin Shu goes into the black cradle, much less leaves Longya outpost. Robbed of his superior officer, Fei Liu is a fledgling Kel without guidance, desperate for reassurance Lin Chen cannot provide. Lin Chen makes up his mind. Fei Liu, Lin Chen calls the boy to him. The servitors flicker lights at each other and flank the child as he crosses the workspace. Fei Liu's head swivels, top knot swishing. Mei Changsu says, "Over here, Fledge." The boy relaxes, eyes riveted to the space where Mei Changsu is and is not. Lin Chen's heart breaks a little, but he does not let his voice betray him. Fei Liu, may I tell Lin Shu about you? About how you came to Longya Outpost, and about your health. Fei Liu glances briefly at Lin Chen, and then returns to staring at the air, where Mei Changsu's voice is. He tilts his head questioningly, waiting for orders, or for a question, or for something else. Fei Liu, Lin Chen continues, remember, I am not Kel. I am the one asking for your permission. You can tell me no, even if Lin Shu wants to know. Do you understand? Fei Liu furrows his brow at the Nerai. Changsu, says Lin Chen. Fledge, this is your choice and yours alone. My order is this. Do not take my interest in your history into account. Only answer Nerai Lin Chen in the affirmative if you, personally, want him to tell me. He is asking for your permission, and I give you permission to make your own choice, to tell Nerai Lin Chen yes or no. Your decision either way will not affect my approval of you as your superior officer. For an off-the-cuff workaround of authority, it's rough, but has the right spirit. The wording is ugly, but so is formation instinct. Fei Liu should be able to sense the good intentions. Fei Liu looks at the servitors out of the corner of his eye. Lin Chen keeps his face carefully blank of interest. The boy is consulting with the droids when offered a small taste of freedom. Fox-like, Lin Chen caches this observation away for further thought at a later time. Fei Liu nods, very slowly. He looks uncertain, with his shoulders up around his ears. Crouching down to catch the boy's line of sight, Lin Chen speaks very softly. Thalio, he can't leave the room so I can ask how much you want me to disclose. Let's go out and you can tell me. He offers his hand to the child, and they walk out of Longya Outpost's Black Cradle facility with their fingers linked. The three servitors follow the pair. Mei Cheongsu waits in silence, listening to the hush of the air circulating through the room. Lin Chen brought him an orchid to visit today, and the air currents catch its blossoms like tiny sails, making them bob infinitesimally. Mei Cheongsu inspects the glowing fuchsia color in rapt delight until the door opens again. Lin Chen enters by himself. I gave him permission to raid the pantry for melons, says the Narai. I told the kitchen staff to leave only 3 melons available for raiding. A cascading helix of integers indicates Mei Cheongsu's grateful amusement on the display. It fluxes into a pattern Lin Chen recognizes as irony. At least you don't have to tell me about the food insecurities. I figured out that on my own. Lin Chen grimaces, voice equally as ironic. How splendidly clever of you, he says. He folds himself into a formal kneel, causing Cheongsu to raise a non-existent brow of nesting parabolas. The revenant speaks next from directly across the mat from Lin Chen. I'm ready when you are. 28 months before you joined us, Fei Liu came into my care, says Lin Chen. He was a challenge presented to me by a colleague in the Amethyst Reed system. It seems a local governor planetside on some little border world wanted a standing army of his very own. He wanted them loyal only to him, so he bought some bootleg Kel programming from a source who never should have had access to the real thing in the first place. He assumed it would take better if he began with children of already impressionable age. Hawk-fucking bastard, murmurs Lin Shu, horrified. My thoughts exactly, says Lin Chen dryly to cover up his own visceral nausea. My colleague extracted 2 dozen children, 8 of whom survived. Thalio wasn't responding to her treatments. She was afraid of losing him and sent him to me in desperation. The Narai eyes the display, monitoring Mei Cheongsu's shifting readouts for instability. Psyches untethered to a physical body manifest emotions differently, and improper routing of strong emotions leads to complications when the psyche is reintroduced to a physical form. Everything looks functional, if flaring with rage and sorrow. He came to me in very poor condition. Lin Chen waits a moment to see if the understatement will fissure his composure. When it doesn't, he continues. I don't think they let him speak. I'm not sure he understood he was a person. For the first 8 months, the servitors made more progress with him than I did, probably because he identified with them more than he did with humans. The only games he knew were killing exercises dressed up with a scoring system. He had never seen a flower. I let him wreck half my garden playing at botanist because it was the first thing he showed any interest in beside throttling my assistants for food. And he hated me. He still resents me. I'm not Kel. He's never met a real Kel. Even you're seconded. But you're closer to what he wants than anyone he's ever known. Mei Cheongsu is not fooled by Lin Chen's wry, self-mocking smile. He has no body, but he can taste Lin Chen's hurt. He wishes he could lean forward and place a hand on the Narai's arm. There isn't anything he can say that Lin Chen doesn't already know about the situation. He is also too stunned by fury and empathy to articulate his thoughts properly. Revenant and Narai let silence flow between them, taking the harsh edges off their thoughts. I will take care of him, Lin Chen, says Lin Shu. I will protect him with everything that remains of me. I will make sure he always has flowers. Tension flows out of Lin Chen's expression, leaving behind peace of mind. You had better, he says. He says it instead of, I know you will. Of course, says Mei Changsu, mock affronted. He pauses. What happened to the governor? He asks offhandedly, as if he doesn't care. The amber light of the display reflects in Lin Chen's eyes, making them fox gold. I took him apart, says Lin Chen. Good, replies the vengeful ghost. 4. Sparking Drama. Kel Mu Nihuang enjoys high table. Her cup is a pale green chalcedony, a gift from her little brother. Long use smoothed out the phoenix engraving to near invisibility, but she and her soldiers can feel the wide wings beneath their fingertips when the cup comes to their hands. Kel Nihuang holds her people lightly, as lightly as a general can, that is. More than half her staff are from her own annexed march, a rich border system abutting one of the Hexarchate's most bellicose neighboring nations. Command recognizes Kel Nihuang's success because it is unquestionable and because she is popular. Nihuang tries not to become too popular, but her march loves her. Her battle record is unmatched, her formations impeccable, and her fame only continues to grow. Dramas borrow tidbits from her life. Just after her promotion to general, a spate of high-grade entertainments produced plots about foreign princesses converting to true high-calendar doctrine, bringing their grateful nations into the Hexarchate's fold. In 3 out of 5 dramas, the princess narrowly avoids assassination by a rogue Shuos agent and is rescued by a Liuzhi love interest who turns out to be the true villain of the piece. He set the Shuos in motion to push her to his side, thinking her naive. From there, the plots differ but follow the same approximate formula. The princess enlists as a Kel foot soldier to hide from the machinations of the devious Liuzhi and his band of suborned Kel. A life as a foot soldier cannot quell the princess's fire. She rises through the ranks like a true ash hawk. Her courage, her dauntless honor, the torrid affair with an Andan philanthropist in the 2nd season cliffhanger. She confronts her ex-lover Liuzhi but cannot bring herself to kill him with her own hands because he holds her stolen Kel ransom. Her foreign values betray her, and she refuses to sacrifice even corrupted Kel. The princess declares herself unfit for entry into Kel Command's hive mind, despite her sterling record. She takes to the background, but with dignity, the Hexarchs obliterate the Liuzhi plot and her former lover, giving her peace of mind at last. Her people assimilate in her example. It's all very tragic. Some of the soundtracks are even listenable. The other 2 dramas were deemed heretical almost immediately after their final editing stages, and never made it to public viewing. Someone managed to leak the opening credits for one of them, though, and Nihuang decides that, heretical or closer to the truth or not, she's glad it didn't air. The costuming is winsome, and the wigs, to say they're badly styled is generous. At the high table, Kel Nihuang's cup returns to her, and she finishes the gulp of water that's left. She fills her plate, and so do her officers. Nihuang is often quiet as she eats, a habit retained from a childhood of different customs. But she knows her Kel will not relax if she does not put them at their ease. Formation instinct is not a problem for Kel Nihuang. Of course, she submitted to the full process as part of the terms of her nation's treaty with the people of the so-called High Calendar. It was that or complete annihilation. Formation instinct ran up against the bastion of Nihuang's sense of self and foundered as if on hidden reefs. She gets a jolt once in a while and feels enough to know best how to feign full obedience. Otherwise, Nihuang sets it aside as yet another useful tool in her mental arsenal and continues about her business. More than that, Nihuang loves her Kel, not because they are Kel, but because they are soldiers under her command. She is responsible for them and their well-being, on and off the battlefield. So she starts the dinner conversation. That novel you've all been passing around last week. Do you think I'd like it? The end. This has been Machineries and Fire, a series of fics by A Box the Color of Heartache, narrated by Rhea314. You can leave feedback to the author at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening. And now some brief reader free talk. So, this is a re-record of a Podfic I recorded back in 2018 for ITPE for Lunatique. I was really into the Machineries of Empire at that time. Great series, very much enjoyed. And I didn't know anything about Nirvana and Fire, but saw this fic and was like, oh, cool, it's like a fusion, and I have lots of feelings about Machineries of Empire, and these seem like cool characters, so I will read it. And there weren't really pronunciation guides available at that time, so I watched a couple of clips, like portions of episodes on YouTube, which were not subbed, trying to figure out characters' names, and then, like, got some sort of thought, which, oh my god, I was so wrong, and then proceeded to record with my, like, best approximation of what I thought I was hearing in a non-subbed YouTube clip where I was attempting to, like, I think they're introducing themselves. I think that was a name. Do not recommend this as a way of recording something, because I was very inaccurate. So I got into Nirvana and Fire, as may be obvious, recently, and watched the whole show and loved it very much and was like, I want to go like listen to Podfic and read all the fic and this is so great and create some Podfic. And I was like, oh wow, I recorded a Podfic of that. I should go listen to that. I really enjoyed those fics. It will be so fun to like re-listen to it now that I know Nirvana and Fire is a canon. And then it was just, ugh, so painful in the pronunciation bits. I'm like, I didn't know what I didn't know. So, having re-listened to myself wincing terribly the whole way through, so I decided to re-record it so that I could maybe re-listen to it myself and not have that reaction. And also, hopefully other people can enjoy it and there won't be, like, huge dissonance between listening to the Nirvana and Fire podfic that I've been making recently and then going into my back catalog and being like, oh, hey, here's this one from like 3 years prior. And yeah, no. Thank you so much also to Lunatique for making a Nirvana and Fire pronunciation guide. That has been lovely and I appreciate it. Yay! Getting better at pronunciation things. Thanks.